So let's welcome everybody to All About Symbian Insight number 83. We're still possibly without you, and he may pop up later on. We always say that, but then Rafe and I waffle on for ages and we don't have time to fit him in. But hey, are you there, Rafe?
I am indeed, Steve.
I've got loads to talk about this week. We've got three or four questions I'd like to get to, but first of all, there's some fairly major news and some fairly major devices. We have the E52 and E55 in the house, and we'll be discussing the E55 and our first impressions of it, and maybe the 52 as well, shortly. But first of all, the big news was a few days ago, as you listen to this, Nokia and Microsoft have announced an alliance. And I'll just quote from our story here. An alliance which is, quote, set to deliver a groundbreaking enterprise-grade solution for mobile productivity. They'll begin collaborating immediately on the design, development and marketing of productivity solutions. That sounds very grand. Bringing Microsoft Office Mobile and Microsoft Business Communication Software, woo, to Nokia's Symbian OS smartphone, starting with the business-focused E-series. Now, we've got a question was sent in to us from the Best of Symbian blog, and this is probably something quite insightful. What is Microsoft really gaining in the deal with Nokia, beyond license fees, that is? It's quite easy, this, from my point of view, to work out Nokia's angle on all this and what Nokia gains, but what's Microsoft's angle, and what does all this really mean, Rafe?
Well, I think for Microsoft, this is really about being able to address a bigger portion of the mobile market. There was a brief mention of license fees there. I'd actually be surprised if license fees for at least the mobile versions are even really an issue here. What's important for Microsoft is they want to have everybody on basically their solution from end to end. And what I mean by that is from mobile right up to the desktop. And because Microsoft Office is one of their cash cows along with the Windows operating system. But obviously the majority of people are going to be using it on a mobile in conjunction with it on a desktop. And if they get people using it on a mobile, or that's the sort of the preferred option, if you like, the default option on Nokia devices, then that kind of implies that they have to use it on the desktop as well. So in one sense, you could see this as a defensive measure from Microsoft, or more to the point, it's building out their ecosystem. So Microsoft, with Windows Mobile, obviously have Office already on a mobile platform, that Windows Mobile reaches about 10% in the last quarter in terms of market share. With Nokia, that become Nokia themselves, or sort of Symbian, do about 50%. So combined, 60% of the market will be on sort of the Microsoft Office solution for a mobile product. So really, it's about extending Microsoft reach. I think this also applies to the rest of the deal. I mean, it's not just about the Office product. It's also about things like the System Center, which is effectively the way a company can manage its IT infrastructure. And that includes things like device management, so remote wiping devices or deploying devices. You know, big companies will have basically a bit of software that will remotely configure and install stuff onto devices, so their entire fleet of mobile devices have the same stuff. So having all the Nokia stuff integrated into that obviously is an advantage, because again, Nokia has the biggest market share. You can also look at things like SharePoint, which is Microsoft's sort of collaborative working environment, and also I think their mobile communicator software was talked about. But really, when it comes down to it, this is about Microsoft extending its reach in mobile so it can sell more of its productivity solutions to companies, principally in the sort of PC and desktop environment. And obviously, they'll be hoping to get some licensing fees for stuff on the mobile as well.
Yeah. The one interesting question, which of course everyone has brought up, is what happens to QuickOffice and to a certain lesser extent the Mobi systems with their Office suite. Now, I think the summary here is that Microsoft are a big company. Nokia are often quoted as being a huge company that takes a long time to turn things around. Microsoft are even bigger, arguably. And I don't see anything really arriving tangibly in people's hands from Microsoft in this front for, as you quoted in your analysis, about 18 months, which means that's 18 more months of QuickOffice sales and new devices shipping with QuickOffice 6 on board. And as QuickOffice themselves have estimated, that's another 200 million users in addition to the 100 million they've already got in their hands. So QuickOffice aren't really going anywhere anytime soon. And who knows what we'll actually see on devices in 18 months' time. Maybe devices will ship with both suites. maybe one, maybe the other. What's your take there? Do you think devices will omit Quick Office in the future?
I think it's likely they will omit Quick Office, and clearly this is a problem for Quick Office in terms of looking at their future roadmap ahead. I mean, it's worth pointing out it's not their only business. You know, they're, I think, the number one office suite on the iPhone, for example. But just as, you know, for the same reason that it's attractive to Microsoft, it's attractive to Quick Office. Nokia has the biggest market share, the biggest reach, and therefore is the biggest addressable market. I think perhaps the interesting thing here is Quick Office going to be able to sort of do more than just the Office suite? And certainly some of their roadmaps have been suggesting that. Some of the stuff they've done with Quick Access, for example, which is effectively being able to access files remotely on your computer, but also store things in the cloud, get quite interesting. And I think they've added a lot of rich functionality over time. And as you say, it's going to take a while for them for Microsoft reach feature parity. Even if that ever happens, you know, Microsoft's implementation of Mobile Office on Windows Mobile certainly don't measure up to Quick Office on Symbian. And so there may well still be a reason for people to use Quick Office to get superior functionality. And obviously the question here is, you know, can Quick Office survive with another company having the built-in embedded solution? You know, if you'd asked me that a couple of years ago, I'd have said no, because, you know, obviously the primary aim was to get for a developer was to be available out of the box, sort of built into the ROM of the device. You know, increasingly it looks like people are getting used to the idea they might be able to install software, and particularly if you go a couple of years down the road, sort of go, if there's something from the App Store, you know, the Ovi Store basically, they can download Quick Office and get superior functionality, they may well go for that. And as I pointed out in the sort of the opinion piece, or rather in the comments, you know, Quick Office get peanuts per license fee at the moment on a device-by-device basis. But if they could convert over to a model of, say, selling Quick Office to 5% of users, they'll probably end up getting more income out of that. So I don't think Quick Office is going anywhere. And as you say, this is going to take quite a long time to happen. And, you know, it's not just the 18 months or the 2 years that it takes to develop. You know, Quick Office is going to be embedded on hundreds of millions of devices after that, which people will be naturally upgrading. There'll be an awareness of Quick Office within the sort of ecosystem. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be doom and gloom. Obviously, it is an issue for them going forward, but it's by no means terminal.
Yeah. It's, you mentioned there 5% of users, and as you say, we don't know the exact amounts, but you know, 5% of 20 million users, smartphone users, that's a sizable amount. Even if they only get $1 royalty per unit, and that's a sizable sum. So I think Quick Office are in a hit for the long haul. They've been deflecting expectations in their press release, which is what they had to do, of course. But I've been involved in reviewing Quick Office products now for forever, and in particular testing things like round trip support and helping them eliminate bugs and increase functionality to the point where virtually everything in the original document is preserved even after you've edited it on the smartphone. And it takes a lot of work and a lot of code to get to that level of document integrity where you can confidently edit something on the mobile. I'm not convinced that Microsoft have got there with their Office Mobile and Windows Mobile. I don't think it's anywhere near as good at preserving all the features of a really complex document in terms of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. Yes, as you say, I think that it'll be quite a while before Microsoft's code gets to a comparative level of functionality and integrity compared to Quick Office.
I was just going to say, getting back to the main meat of the alliance, I mean, there's a lot of people going, how significant is this? And that's actually difficult to judge, because until we actually see some of the fruits of the alliance, it's difficult to say, because having two companies of this size who have very different vested interests work together, you know, it's not really the usual mode of business operation for, to be fair, either company, you know, of having partners of this size. And typically when two very large companies work together, you know, more often than not, it doesn't work out. I think in this case, it probably is in both of their interests to work out, because this alliance is clearly aimed at sort of being anti-RIM. You know, Microsoft on its own doesn't have the mobile device reach, and Nokia doesn't really have the behind the firewall enterprise solutions. And the most interesting bit to me in some ways is this talk of future collaboration for creating the next generation of productivity solutions, and there was very little detail on that. But it'll be interesting to see if these two companies can get together, if they do combine. You know, whatever you think about Microsoft, it is one of the world's biggest software companies and has a great deal of expertise. And equally, Nokia is the world's leading mobile manufacturing company, and also it's getting into services in a big way. So together they have a very large talent pool to draw on. And I think, you know, that kind of combination could be a very fierce competitor in the enterprise space. I mean, Nokia's done well with its E-Series device in recent years. The E-Series alone sells about 50% of what RIM does with its BlackBerry device. And of course, if you add in all the other Nokia devices, it's a lot more. It's sort of about 20% market share versus sort of 45%, depending on which figures you count on. And so this is, you know, quite a threat, I think, to RIM. But yes, I think it's also fair to say that the proof is in the pudding. And as I did suggest in the analysis, I actually think the most significant part of this is really the integration with sort of the back-end enterprise services rather than the stuff like Microsoft Office Mobile, because as we know, that's already available for these Nokia devices. But if Nokia is effectively becoming part of Microsoft's enterprise end-to-end solution, which they sell into companies, and you know, corporates are where the big money is often in this kind of enterprise sales, you know, it's pretty compelling. It's also something of a strategic shift from Microsoft. You know, they're effectively saying, we know we can't do it just with Windows Mobile as a platform. We need another mobile platform in order to be able to maintain our position in the enterprise market. And, you know, given that Microsoft have only developed Office for, you know, I think it's the Windows platform and the Mac OS platform, and even there, there's been some reluctance. I do think this is quite a, you know, a significant move on their part. And certainly in terms of strategic partnerships, you know, it's certainly a big deal. But as I say, the attention seems to be on Microsoft's Office Mobile. And really, I actually think that's the less interesting part of the deal.
You mentioned several times there the Microsoft's Windows Mobile market share in the smartphone world is around 10%. In actual fact, it's from the latest Gartner figures we put up on the site last week, it's down to just under around 9%. And over the last 2 or 3 years, it's gone from something like 15 or 16% in a downwards direction. So Microsoft are obviously not despairing, that's too strong a word, but they're disappointed in the take-up of Windows Mobile. And this, as you say, this does make sense from their point of view, as well as from Nokia's. Just looking at the Gartner figures, the next sort of news item of note, Nokia's world market share for smartphones is down 2% year on year, but they did sell more. They sold 3 million more units compared to quarter two 2008. This is quarter two 2009, selling a total of 18.4 million smartphones. So my rule of thumb for Nokia and S60 is normally 5 to 6 million smartphones per month, and that's remained fairly constant over the last few years, so you can work with that. RIM improved slightly for their quarter two 2009 to 18.7 market share. Second place, Apple is third place at 13.3, HTC fourth, and Fujitsu fifth with their, presumably that's the Japanese smartphones. So you could consider that Nokia's market share is down, but then again, they sold more, and they're still outselling RIM, Apple, HTC, and Fujitsu all combined. So, yes, there are trends there, but I've got a few major editorials coming up on things, for example, touch versus non-touch, and the way that battle is going in the next few years. And I think it's always, people write off Nokia over and over again. They pick up the gossip, oh, Nokia's ditching Symbian, for example, this is the latest rumor, and picking up MIMO instead, or going to some other version of Linux. And it's all blatantly untrue. Nokia is a huge company. Symbian is a huge endeavor. And the numbers they're already selling and continue to sell are huge. And it'll take a long, long time for these truths to die down. Everyone agrees now, I think, that MIMO is going to come in at the very top end for some flagship multimedia tablet stroke phones with Nokia. And S60, or Symbian as it will become, will be pushed just slightly further down into the low to mid-tier, the mid-tier and the mid to high tier. That sort of middle ground where Symbian is so strong and indeed where one-handed traditional S60 third edition is so strong. The overlap between S60 or Symbian fifth edition or Symbian 1 And the new MIMO smartphones, that's the interesting thing. On the high ground, which way will Nokia pitch that so that they can carry on selling things like the N97 and the N97 successors while still introducing these new MIMO-based devices? Have you any opinions there?
Yes, I think it's interesting. I mean, there's all this talk about MIMO, but we don't really know anything very official yet. I mean, my take on this is personally, I think Nokia is looking at the way that the high end is evolving, and it's the sort of the convergence, if you like, of the laptop and the smartphone, which is kind of the new trend. We've already had, you know, device convergence in terms of cameras and MP3s, and I think you could maybe look at something like the iPhone as sort of the very early signs of this, but also the rise of the kind of the mid type devices. It's almost like a new category of devices is being created. I mean, I'm always skeptical to sort of divide it into a different category, because the truth is it's all along the same continuum. But it does seem that, you know, there's almost this hybrid between a mobile phone and computer where it stops being one-handed but retains some of the attributes of a mobile phone in terms of being relatively small and having sort of cellular connectivity. But, you know, these devices may often come paired with another mobile phone. And I think this is where the MIMO may play a role. And I think Symbian wants to play in this space as well. You know, they've said quite a lot that they're looking to get onto netbooks. At the moment, I think their UI means they're not in a very good position. S65th edition needs to evolve in order for them to really address that space better. Hence, I think Nokia is looking at MIMO. So I don't think it's even necessarily accurate to say that MIMO will replace Symbian at the high end. I think it will become an additional option at the high end, because it does rather depend on how you define high end. You know, something like the E72 is, relatively speaking, a high-end device, but that device is going to remain Symbian and will do for the foreseeable future. Whereas you say this kind of multimedia tablet is perhaps where MIMO may have a stake. And to go back to what you were talking about with the Gartner figures, I mean, I think it is a concern, actually, that Nokia's market share has dropped a couple of percent, because this is really in the, and yes, they've sold more devices, but we have to remember that this is in the context of a growing smartphone market. And so Nokia should be selling more devices, even if it maintains its same market share. Dropping off a few percent isn't perhaps as big a deal as some people seem to have made it out. I mean, after all, we're talking about 1/25th of its market share has sort of gone away. And compared to some of the other drops, you know, actually you're seeing far bigger drops from the likes of Fujitsu, mainly because they're selling far fewer devices. Actually, what's caught my attention here is not so much that Nokia's lost market share to Apple and RIM, it's actually RIM and Apple, and to an extent HTC, have gained it off other manufacturers. So looking at these Gartner figures, you can see that a year ago, roughly 8 million smartphone devices, or 25% of the market, was lumped into the other category. So that's everyone from Motorola to Samsung and many of the other manufacturers.
Sony Ericsson.
Exactly, Sony Ericsson. And probably a list of, I guess, 10 or 20 companies who are selling more than, say, 50,000 units. This time round, that's dropped to 5.6 million or 13.9%. That's dropped almost in half. So actually, Apple is taking market share, and RIM is taking market share, and HTC is taking market share, not from Nokia, but from other manufacturers. And I think this is suggestive of the fact that the whole market is becoming a lot more competitive. And Nokia's been highly competitive in the sort of mid-tier space and in the E-series devices. You know, it's gone from selling roughly 2 million devices, E-series devices a quarter, to something like 4.7 million in the last quarter. If you look at their sort of mid-series phones, again, they've seen a similar rise. The N-series has actually dropped. Now, that's partly to do with the classification, but also, I think, partly because the competition has been fiercest at the high end. So these Gartner figures do have an awful lot of trends in them. But to sort of say that Apple and RIM have taken market share from Nokia, yes, they have. It's taken a couple of percent, but they've taken far more from other manufacturers. And actually, the concern really is for the other manufacturers, not so much Nokia, especially given some of the device portfolio they've got coming down the road. And I am thinking of devices that, you know, some of which are rumored and some which have already been announced. You know, we're going to talk about the E55 in a while, but the E52, the 5800, which is selling great guns, the 5530.
Yeah.
But also it will be producing new devices at the high end. So relatively speaking, despite being under what is perceived everywhere to be a massive onslaught, Nokia is in fact maintaining its market share more than sort of all the media reporting would suggest. Actually, the ones that are in problem are the so-called others, which are finding it tough going because basically it's not sustainable being able to compete if you're not producing enough devices.
Yeah, like amongst the others, of course, in the context of this Gartner table, are Samsung and Sony Ericsson, who had Symbian smartphones in the past and to a certain extent in the current day and the future. Sony Ericsson have got their Satio, and Samsung have got the IE2910HD, of course. And I'd expect the numbers for those two manufacturers to rise over the quarter four 2009. It's very noticeable that all these sort of tables going quarter on quarter, they're always incredibly seasonal. For example, there's the huge peak in Apple sales towards the summer when they do their new release and the new iPhone comes out and they have a huge peak. There's also the Christmas sales, which affects some manufacturers more than others. And of course, with manufacturers like Samsung, Sony Ericsson, in this case, with a fairly limited portfolio of smartphones, when that particular device or devices, when they come out, you then get peaks, which then affect a particular quarter in the year. So what I'd like to see really is year-on-year annual sales. And maybe I'm the guy to sit there with a calculator and do all the totting up and produce some stuff for readers to pore over.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I've got a spreadsheet that tracks exactly that. And really, you can't look at any one quarter individually. And as you rightly say, it'll be interesting with Samsung and Sony Ericsson whether they'll be able to come back with some of their Symbian Foundation devices. And of course we haven't really talked about Android, which isn't really in the table yet. I think Gartner said that it was something like 2% market share. I mean, fair enough, they just didn't really have many devices on the market, and now they've got the HTC Magic sort of appeared halfway through Q2, and they've now got the HTC Hero coming, which I think will sell quite well, and there's more coming in the second half of the year. And HTC, for example, have said they're going to be focusing more on the mid-tier in the second half, which will inevitably mean they'll probably sell more devices because the mid-tier is obviously a more volume segment than the high end. So I think it is important not to get sort of obsessed by these things. But it is noticeable that a company like Sony Ericsson, which has a very high-profile device in something like the Xperia, or Samsung in the something like the Omnia, aren't appearing on these, you know, quarterly results. Admittedly, they'd need 1.2 million devices to sort of get above Fujitsu. But when you consider, you know, a device like the E71 is probably selling that a quarter, and the 5800 has sold, I think it was 3.7 million in the last quarter, it's actually not that big an ask to get a single device to that level. And so it does suggest to me that, you know, Samsung smartphone strategy or Sony Ericsson smartphone strategy certainly isn't as healthy as they may want it to be.
Yeah, it's one final stat and observation about these Gartner figures. As Ray said, the whole market is growing. That's not necessarily the whole phone market across the world. It's certainly the whole smartphone market. The number of phones which are being sold or shipped that classify as smartphones has grown by 25% quarter on quarter. So you can see that over the course of a whole year, you're talking about virtually doubling the size of the smartphone market. So there is plenty of room for growth here. It's not a question of there being a limited pool of smartphone buyers and they're all manufacturers are fighting each other for the same buyers. The whole market is growing at a massive rate still. And there are charts and graphs all over the internet to prove that.
And that trend's just going to accelerate as Nokia push S60 into the mid-tier and as we sort of see these devices push up and sort of converging with laptops. And so I would expect this continued growth of the smartphone market to continue for a considerable time to come. Look at the Japanese market, it's a good example of this, where nearly every phone sold there is now a smartphone. And I think we could probably look to see that happen in the rest of the world over the next sort of 5 to 10 years.
And we've said this point as well before, that the concept of what is a smartphone, what isn't a smartphone, that will become increasingly relevant. The fact that you can't distinguish as well. Some of the feature phones, quote feature phones, can now do more in many regards than some of the smartphones. My daughter, we bought an £80 QWERTY keyboarded LG feature phone for her last week, and it can do an awful lot. You can do things like checking your IMAP email. This is on a feature phone, and it's got a decent camera, not too bad a web browser, and most of the functionality in terms of music and podcasts and media and video playback that you'd find on a video on a smartphone. You just haven't perhaps got the extensible smartphone OS, but that will cease to become that relevant in a few years' time. Again, I think we're looking at the overall phone figures rather than the smartphone figures.
Yeah, no, it's probably sensible to call them open OS phones or some similar thing, because yes, as we've said many times, smartphone is rather a meaningless or devalued term by now.
Yeah, let's move on to another item. The E55, Nokia E55 and Nokia E52 are now in the house. I have in my hand, my sweaty little hand, the E55. I'm sure Rafe has got the E52 in his at Blandford Towers. We'll just cover the 55 for now, Rafe, because it's the hottest of the two devices because of the QWERTY keypad. My initial impressions of the E55 are that it's just so incredibly thin, as you commented, with the 1500 milliamp hour BP4L battery. If you take that out, there's virtually nothing left of the phone. It's just a centimeter or so of plastic and electronics, and that's it. And quite how they've managed to fit in Wi-Fi and GPS. Does it have a magnetometer?
It does, yes.
Yeah, it's got a new technology, EDOF, extended depth of field camera, which I'll come back to in a moment. Only a mono speaker, but then you'd expect that. And the QWERTY, half QWERTY keypad, it looks like a nightmare to use and it looks far too fiddly. But once you start typing on it, it's a bit like the Apple iPhone virtual on-screen keyboard where they said, look, don't worry about actually trying to hit a particular key or a particular spot. Just go with it and trust the software to do the rest. And it's a bit like that with this. You have to think, okay, it's a QWERTY keyboard. I shall ignore the fact that there are two letters per key. I'll just aim roughly for the letter I want and see what happens. I did a complete 35-word sentence almost without looking at the screen. And I looked up and in the predictive QWERTY software, I got every single word right. Now, as with any predictive system, once you start straying into real names, places, and punctuation, then you're starting to fiddle around a bit, much more than you would on, say, the E71 or E75, which of course you can actually hit the exact character you want. But with that proviso apart, if you're just banging off email messages and writing replies to text and social, updating your status on Twitter, that sort of thing, then this little half QWERTY keyboard works an absolute treat. A few other observations. The back of the E55 has got the most weirdly textured battery cover I've ever seen. At first, I thought it was plastic. Then I said, no, it's velvet. And I thought, oh, I can't be right. And it turned out to be metal. And it's incredibly thin metal, but textured in a very organic way. And it's just feels utterly bizarre. I think I like it, but then I haven't used it for a few months and seen how dirty it's going to get. So, but at least it's black, so it's not going to show the dirt too much. Now, before I hand over to Rafe and his impressions, I want to just comment on the camera. Many people have said, look, it hasn't got an autofocus camera. It's 3.2 megapixels, but the shutter button is a simple press it and it takes the photo. And there's no concept of autofocus. But this EDOF is worth explaining because it's the first time I'd come across this. What they do, they have a special lens design where I quote here from Wikipedia, the longitudinal chromatic aberration has been increased. And just paraphrasing what Wikipedia says, what they do is they change the lens design so that the different color channels of the RGB image, each color channel is focused on a different point within the range from 30 centimeters to infinity. They then take the photo, they examine the sharpness for each of the RGB red, green, blue channels, and which for each point in the image, whichever color in the channel is sharpest, they use information from that part of the sensor for that part of the image. So essentially they're getting three different focus points out of the single photograph, if that makes sense, and then they use digital processing techniques to combine these three different focused images all within the one image by using the color channels. And they somehow do all the whizzy stuff in software to produce an image that actually is in focus from about half a meter through to infinity. Now, the only thing this system is wonderful. It's very fast and it works brilliantly, light permitting. It doesn't do macro photography. So if, like me, you're quite fond of photographing flowers and phones and other things that are closer than, for example, a foot or two away, then you're going to hit blurred images because this fixed lens simply can't cope. But provided you're just taking normal photographs of people around you, objects, places, landscapes, then this one single press for shutter button with the extended depth of field should get you a pretty darn good image, and everything within the picture will be in focus. So you could take a photograph of, say, your partner a meter away, and not only would they be in focus, in theory, the horizon behind them would also be in focus. Now, obviously, this needs testing, and I need someone like myself who can go off and take lots of photos, produce lots of examples for all of our Symbian readers, so I'm going to have great fun trying out this EDOF system and seeing whether it really works. Rafe, what were your impressions of the E55?
Well, just to add to what you said about the camera, I was sort of pleasantly surprised by this because, you know, you automatically think, ooh, no autofocus, but, you know, it does seem to work. I mean, yes, it's definitely a trade-off, but I think it's one I'm very willing to accept for a device that's this thin. And I think you have to bear in mind that, you know, these kind of devices, there's always compromise in the design, but it produces, yeah, pretty reasonable results. As you say, the macro thing is the big thing. The other thing I'd say about it is, you know, it doesn't have the sort of the power of, in terms of the flash, but I don't really think you buy this device for the camera. And to me, that's the only significant trade-off in the functionality terms. You know, the rest of the device, it has pretty much everything you could want. You know, there's the GPS, including a compass. It's actually running the new Nokia hardware platform, so you sort of got an increase in the processor speed. I wouldn't dwell too much on that. As we've said before, processor speed is a little bit misleading, but there's plenty of free RAM, about 55 megabytes after you boot. There's a micro SD slot, so you can have really as much as you like, and there's enough on the internal disk, about 50 megabytes free when you first get it, which is down on something like the E51, but still enough room for you know, to be sufficient, I would say. And I would just reinforce what Steve said about the actual size of the device. It's really hard to appreciate until you get it in the hand just how small this thing is, especially when you consider it actually manages to be smaller than the E51 despite having a screen that's 0.2 inches bigger. And this really is very thin, you know, very pocketable, far more than any other sort of smartphone that I've come across before. You know, this really is a step up. And in terms of the materials, it's really gorgeously made. You know, well, typically for the E series, it's well constructed, but there's nice touches all the places. It's like the aluminium battery cover that Steve was talking about. That's actually made out of aluminium, which means it can be anodized, which means you can get a bigger variety of colors on this device. And hence we'll see, I would imagine, a whole slew of colors, including the gold and the red that we've come to expect from the E series devices. There's also little touches like the aluminium on the front of the device on the D-pad, slightly different textured material just to give it a little bit more grip, make it easier to find if you're not looking at the phone. And similarly, the actual keys themselves are sloped slightly so that they're lower at the front and higher at the back, which means you effectively improve the accuracy when you're pressing them. And like Steve, I found the predictive software very good indeed. It does take some getting used to, and I think the concern here will be that people will take a look and go, ooh, no, I can't cope with that. But I would urge people to try it and give it a go, because it certainly didn't really give me any major problems. And of course, the predictive software does learn as you go. So once you enter your name or any other name for the first time, it will then learn that and be able to reproduce that in the dictionary if you enter it again. And so it sort of rewards usage, if you like. It gets better over time. And as I say, you know, in terms of the actual software suite, you're getting things like the latest version of Nokia Messaging, which has the integrated sort of new email client that includes both Nokia Messaging and Mail for Exchange, HTML support, folder support. It's also got this updated camera software. It can take panoramic software modes. It's got the latest version of all the Nokia services, things like Engage, the music store, even the music search application that was previously only found on Express Music. The one fly in the ointment was that there was no podcasting on this phone. I'm not quite sure why. I'm going to try and find out. And I can only imagine that some kind of oversight or something didn't work, because it's one of my favorite S60 applications, maybe a bit niche in one sense, but I know there are other fans out there. But when you consider the level of functionality you're getting, you know, it's Wi-Fi, you know, quad band GSM, tri-band WCDMA, and it's costing about £250, so it's half the price of sort of the really high-end devices, even something like the N86, it's, you know, just under half the price of that. and you're getting basically exactly the same functionality, which to my mind, together with sort of the build quality and the high quality materials used in the construction, make it really fantastic value for money. And so I think the sort of savvy consumer will take a very close look at these devices, both the E55 and the E52, which are, to all intents and purposes, identical apart from the keyboard. You know, I'll take a very close look at these devices. It's been a long time since I've gone, yes, I can see these. I really like these devices. The software's really mature. The hardware's great. They come together to create, you know, quite a compelling combination.
Yeah, it's quite telling, really, putting the E55 next to my N86, also in one of the very latest N-series device, almost identical software platform, but putting the two devices side by side, the E55 just looks like an after 8 mint comparison compared to the digestive of the N86. It's, I don't know why the N-series devices are so thick. I guess it comes down to the camera, ultimately. Yes, I'm very impressed by the E55, and my full review will be up on the site within a few days. Now, we've just got time for a few questions. We'll try and rattle through a few of these. Nick Anstey asks to the panel, why in 2009 do we still not have fast Wi-Fi syncing between phones and desktop? It's a very good question. We've had Bluetooth syncing and cable syncing, but was there a technical reason, Rafe, why Wi-Fi isn't used?
I can't think of any particular reason, and yes, I'd like to see Wi-Fi syncing as well. I suppose the slight cheat on this is actually UPnP does offer multimedia syncing, and this is only on the most recent Nokia devices. You can actually sync all your media over Wi-Fi, but you can't, of course, do contacts and calendar. I suspect part of the reason for this is it's actually more complicated to do in terms of how many different types of networks you might have to deal with, what your home network is, and being able to get through router firewalls or PC firewalls, which makes it much more difficult than something like Bluetooth or a direct cable connection. But yes, yeah. I mean, I have to admit, it's a sort of functionality that would appeal to me, or maybe being aware of a Wi-Fi network and asking me if I'd like to sync, or indeed, you know, switching over specific things. And so, yeah, no, I agree with Nick. It's 2009, yeah, it's high time we saw this sort of thing.
Yeah, if you think of things like the Nintendo DS, for example, every DS games console used by the typical 7 or 8 year old, they've got Wi-Fi built in, and they communicate via Wi-Fi, and they share games and share modules via Wi-Fi, and it's all handled transparently and easily. So if a Nintendo DS console can do it, I fail to see why Symbian smartphones can't.
Yeah, I think, as I say, the case it's easy going from device to device, and you know, you will see some games that you support play over Wi-Fi as they do over Bluetooth, but going through a computer, which will typically be connected to a home network or an office network, does considerably increase the complexity. You know, it's not ad hoc mode as it would be with the DS. It's you're going into an infrastructure mode.
Yeah.
That does get more difficult.
I guess we're coming back to blame Microsoft there. No, Microsoft are good guys now that they've
formed clients. Yes, I meant to say nice things about them now.
They're white hats now, aren't they? Not black hats. Okay. Another question, I will just finish with this one. Gareth Buxton asks, and it's a very good question, how vital is the feature to re-download apps from the Nokia Obi Store? Now, currently, there's no option to do this, and he actually asked the Nokia Care people, well, why can't I re-download the application I've already bought, after presumably wiping his phone with new firmware update or having to reset it for some reason? And they replied, please note there isn't an option to re-download a purchased application. If a user needs to re-download such a thing, we would send the user an SMS containing a link to re-download the application, at which point he said, okay, send me the link, and he's still waiting a few weeks later. Now, he doesn't think this is acceptable. I agree, it's totally unacceptable. I fail to see why, after months of being in service, the Obi Store client doesn't have a simple option. It already shows you what you've bought. Why they then can't include simple download option. The client itself knows the IMEI of the handset it's on. It can verify that you are you. It can verify it's the same device. It's a no-brainer. There should be a download link. What do you think of this answer of Nokia's, Rafe?
I would be inclined to agree. I think I can understand it if it's a different handset or a different IMEI, but when it's the same handset, really, that kind of functionality should be available. And I do understand that this sort of thing is in the roadmap, and it may well also be the ability when you upgrade a device to sort of move your licenses over. So I think that's the sort of thing we can look for in a future Obi Store upgrade. The fact that it hasn't come after a couple of months is not really a surprise. You know, there do tend to be quite long time periods between major updates. So I would guess that this sort of thing was envisaged to be in phase two of Ovi Store, and they're probably, for the big releases, on something like a 6 to 9 month release cycle. Obviously, it would be nice if it happened quicker. And yes, I would, you know, I see no reason why it shouldn't be like that from the off. And I'm surprised it wasn't. On the other hand, you know, the whole idea of the Ovi Store is you download something and then install it. And while the sort of typical user will be quite happy with that, I think some of the power users who do tend to maybe reset their handset, or they have a problem and, you know, need to reinstall it for some reason, don't predominate. So it'd be interesting to see the figures of how many people actually do need to re-download something completely legitimately onto the same handset. But I don't think there's any reason you can avoid the fact that it's not really good enough, and this sort of functionality should be available even now.
Yeah, okay, so we're agreed there. Okay, thanks, Rafe. We're running out of time again. We've just gone slightly long again, but it's been a great podcast, and we will try and catch up with you all next week. So it's goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
And goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
Till next time.